This is actually the first time I'm using this voice memo app on this new phone. Meet the new phone, same as the old phone. I don't know if I'll get tired of that joke anytime soon. The reason I'm... Well, there's really two reasons to have the voice memo thing. But the most important reason, and this is something I suggest, if you have a smartphone and you're parking in a parking garage or in an unfamiliar neighborhood, use your voice memo app to remind you where you are parked. It would have saved me hours and tired legs to have always done this. I almost always do it now. Just my advice to you. So I thought I would say a few words. The library closes in just a couple of hours, and I haven't gone there today, but I'm going to go right now. God, those keys. Oh, I almost just tore them out and threw them out the window. That would have been smart. I've had that keychain since the year I turned 16, which, as you know, if you have a calendar handy, is a long time. But, well. So anyhow, I went to Barnes & Noble. There was a book signing from a debut author. His book isn't even out yet, but they've had it all week there at the, what is it called now? The Barnes & Noble Brandon Sanderson Living Tribute Bookstore. I saw that they're putting up the Sanderson statue, and it's weird because he's already so much fatter than the one that they're making the statue of. But anyhow, this guy, his name is Justin Call, and it's a fantasy book. It's the first book in a tetralogy, which he has already all mapped out, and he's going to have a trilogy or a series that follows that, and he told us what that was going to be about, and then another series after that, all in the same world with the same characters. Ambitious this guy is, to a fault. If I had to guess, I'd say the guy was 35, maybe older. I didn't see any gray in his beard, but I see plenty in mine, goddammit. He's not a kid, though, and that's one of the things that, you know, I'm used to these kids. And when I say kid, I guess I'm being overly critical. But, like, my favorite song of the year is by Billie Eilish, and she's a kid. And then I discovered this guy, Phineas, and I just ate his stuff up. I was just like, this guy, oh my gosh, this guy is awesome. And he's, you know, like 23 or something like that, which is probably the perfect age to be. No exaggeration. Look, when I was 23, I could eat 3 Big Macs in one meal and not gain an ounce. It wasn't until my metabolism changed when I realized, oh gosh, you mean I can't even eat one Big Mac without gaining an ounce? But yeah, the Phineas guy, oh my gosh. And you already know if you're younger than me, but Phineas is Billie Eilish's brother. So I guess fandom runs in the family or something like that. I don't know what to say. But I'm so much older than everybody. I talked to a woman yesterday, and I call her a woman instead of a girl, because she just seemed like she was in her 30s or so. And a guy was speaking to me in Spanish, and I said, ¿Cuántos años tienes? And he said, 43. And the woman said, what did he say, 33? And I said, 43. And the guy was just like, ah, hey, that's why I told you in Spanish, so she wouldn't hear. And I was just like, oh, I'm sorry, did you have interest in her? What's that like? But she said 43, and she sort of wrinkled up her nose, and she's like, that's old enough to be my dad. And I said, don't say that, because true whether it may be or not, that's not cool. That dude clearly finds you attractive, and
you just said that that's the same age as my dad. And she's like, no, I mean it. My dad's 43. He had me when he was 23. And I was just like, oh, you're 20? Oh, okay. It's weird because she just looked like she was older. And so because I don't give a shit, I told her that. I said, you know, I'm surprised you're 20. You look so much older. How does it feel? Huh? How does it feel, Sydney, to almost be brutally butchered? The people have a right to know! Yeah, see, I became as bad as her, didn't I? But she told me her whole friggin' life story of her mom said she didn't want to be 60 and going to her kids' high school graduation. And so, you know, they had to pump out these little bastards as fast as they friggin' could. Which is great. I hope the mom doesn't live to be 60. Because imagine how crippling that would be to be 60. Anyway, I left the Brandon Sanderson Living Tribute bookstore. And so, of course, a little bit of Lex Luthor is alive in me. So a little bit of bitterness, I realize. But that was the point I was trying to make with all this. Holy moly. One more thing about that, though, is I have it on really good authority that age ain't nothing but a number. Okay? So just keep that in mind. All right? Especially if you're 25 and you want to date me. Good for you. Oh, boy. Let's do the Brandon Sanderson thing, because my goodness. I mean, when I lived in Los Angeles, and if you've ever lived in Los Angeles, you felt this as well. You'd be stuck in traffic and you'd be so angry because you had plans. If you weren't me, you probably had a date and you were going to miss it because you were stuck in traffic and there was no reason for it. I remember the mayor or the city council or whatever had put out this press conference where somebody said, what are you going to do to address, you know, the congestion on the freeways? And they said, look, Los Angeles is growing at a rate so fast that if we were to start to, let's say, double the freeways right now, by the time that we finished, the population of Los Angeles would have outgrown that and doubled again, making it pointless. So we're not going to do anything. I was 20-something when I saw that press conference. And even then, I was wise enough to say, oh, so you're not going to do anything. How does that make sense? I think secretly he was hoping that Southern California would break off and fall into the ocean sooner rather than later. And it hasn't. But yeah, I would be so angry when I would be in traffic. I remember Paul Reiser in his stand-up said, you get these feelings, these terrible thoughts when you're stuck in traffic. Like, you know, one time I was stuck on the 405 and I thought, you know, if half the people on this freeway were dead, I'd be home by now. Anyway, I'm almost at the library. I didn't get to any of this. The guy was young, but not that young. The guy, like I said, if I had to guess, I'd say the guy was like 35, 38. He might even have been 40. And this was his first published novel. And he said it had taken him 20 years to write it. And if anything, that made me feel good. Because I can't think of anything that I have worked 20 years on. Any writing projects that stalled from 20 years ago are never going to be finished. I suppose the Ben Parks series is 15 this year. And so, yeah, that's going on 20. I don't know. Anyhow, the guy was interesting. He was so positive, so up with people. He was one of those guys that I talk about every single February when I go to my writer's conference. He was such a fan of his own work and was such a good seller of his book. You know, you want this and here's some cool things about this book. And this is why I wrote it, is because, you know, I had never read anything
where this? And I'd asked myself this question. And anyhow, the book is called Master of Sorrows. If you want to go on to Amazon and look it up, or I mean, if you want to buy it, I haven't read it. But the group that came to his signing was small. And I'd say when it first started, when the reading, the signing, the Q&A first started, there were about 10 people there, including me and including him. But as it went on, a few more people came and a few more people came. And at one point, he interrupted his statement to express excitement that his sister had flown in from Washington to be at his Q&A. And I thought that was really sweet. It's neat. I ended up sitting next to the sister, and I should have hit on her. I guess I shouldn't have. But the guy carried himself as though 100 people had showed up, as though he had a packed house of 500 people there. And he talked about his book, and he was so enthusiastic, and talked about how long it took him to write, and then how fast he wrote the sequel, and that he's in it for the long haul, that he's not one of those guys that says, I'll write this and I'll write that, and if depending on how something sells, I'll write more of those or whatever. It's like, nope. He has saddled himself to this wagon train of this series for the next decade plus, and he's happy to be there, and I like that. I found a lot to admire in the guy, and this is the second signing I've been to in the past 6 months. The last time I had gone, it was not yet renamed after Brandon Sanderson. But I think the plan was in place. I didn't know about it. Otherwise, I wouldn't have gone. This guy, he mentioned Sanderson over and over and over again. And I'll bet somebody took him aside and said, this is not really just the normal Barnes & Noble anymore. This is, you know what a living tribute is? And so it would be helpful if you mentioned Brandon Sanderson. My hair was falling out in just clumps the whole time that he did. I'm thinking I'm just going to shave it all the way back so it doesn't look like male pattern baldness. It just looks like, well, what it is a middle-aged guy desperately fighting against entropy. But yeah, he mentioned him a bunch of times and how they were similar and how they were different. And yeah, the big takeaway I got out of it was that you need to be your own cheerleader. I don't know if I could cut it doing what he was doing because I am too self-effacing. And I'm sure the guy had a very similar upbringing to me, but I always live in fear of being perceived as arrogant, even though I am, except for when we're talking about Brandon Sanderson, I am the furthest possible thing from arrogant. Can I have some more, sir? Please? Please? Yeah, I'm sure he sold some books. He told people walking by, come sit down. Hey, we've got some free cookies. I'm about to read from my book. You'll love it. Kind of thing. And I wouldn't have the planter's assorted nuts to do that, to talk to a stranger and say, come sit with me. Let me fondle at least one bosom. And he did his reading and it was fine. He did alter his voice a little bit for the older character. I mean, and maybe that, that is an arena besides talking smack about Brandon Sanderson, where I do have arrogance. But I wondered about his audiobook. I wondered how an author like this, whether they have any control, any power over their own product, or if that comes only with success, with having more and more say in the publishing field and that. And apparently, so I asked him, I raised my hand and I asked him about the audiobook, and he told me about the process and that they had showed him like a list of potential narrators, and he said, well, no, what about this guy? This guy would be perfect. And so they went out and they paid this guy to do the book he wanted, and he had said that he'd had some demands. He wanted there to be somebody who could sound youthful because the protagonist of the book is 17 years old, and he wanted somebody who would switch their voice up for the different characters. And I feel like I would have done a fine job with both of those things. Just this week, I went on to ACX, which is the, if you've got a book and you're looking for a narrator, we will hook you up website through Audible. And there was a local author there on the list, and she was somebody that I've never met before, but I've been in a room with before. I've seen her before, and she is the sister-in-law of a girl that I used to work with, that I guess it's fair to say that I was close with, as close as I can be with somebody else. And I thought, well, that's kind of cool. I'll send her an email and say, hey, I'm local here. Maybe I'll do one of your short stories or one of your audiobooks or something like that. Just, you know, in an effort to, there's a word for it. The word is like socialize with some kind of end result in mind. There's a word for that. You know what I mean? It's just like, I'm going to get to know these people. I'm going to go to this activity to get to know these people, and hopefully friendship will come out of it. But more than that, I want to make contacts and want to get my name out there and stuff like that. There's a word for that, and I'm not going to think of it right now. But I looked at the books that she was auditioning for, and she had put a note at the bottom, and she said, I don't want somebody who will try to do a voice for all the characters. Just a straight read, please. And I was just like, oh, okay, click, closed. I didn't even bother going on to Amazon to read the reviews, which is, you know, the second step that I always take. Third step is I read the audition material. And then fourth step is I actually audition. There was another one, though, a Western, and it was short. And it was a Western series, and a guy had done. And I thought, oh, well, that's interesting. I love Westerns. I'd check that out. And so I clicked on that and read the synopsis, and it sounded interesting. And it was short enough that I was just like, yeah, this won't cripple me. Yeah, I think I'll... So step number two, I clicked on Amazon, and there were, I think, three reviews there. All fairly positive, but two of the reviews mentioned typos. And the second review mentioned that they needed an editor. And I was like, oh, okay, click. Because, look, kids, I was not a professional editor, but I am an editor. And if you needed my help editing your manuscript, I am the kind of editor who would say you used the wrong form of whose here. You need a period here. Here you need a comma. You don't need a period. You know, this sentence doesn't really work, that kind of thing. That's the kind of editor that I am, and I have a ton of confidence in that. I would rank myself up with any professional editor as far as typos and catching mistakes and grammar errors goes. The other kind of editor, though, where it's just like, oh, this scene is too long, you know, this character falls really flat. That sort of thing, I don't know. I think I'm too sensitive to try and analyze that for fear that somebody would analyze something that I worked my ass off on and say, you know, this falls flat, this character doesn't work. But yeah, I had to click close, and I didn't audition for that. Guys, you got to show your manuscript to somebody, even if it's some dumbass like Rish Outfield, to catch all the typos. Dude, there is no excuse for typos. I remember that guy that I don't talk about anymore because I felt like I was just getting his name out there, who was the worst hack I ever encountered in my travels. And his stuff was littered with typos and grammar errors to the point where I was just like, is this a fifth grader? This is like an ambitious homeschooled kid. Oh, that's adorable. And then I actually made the mistake of reading an interview with him where he said, none of that stuff matters. You know, people tell me there's a bunch of typos in my manuscript. I don't care. You bought it, didn't you? He didn't have the respect for the English language. He didn't have any respect for any. I mean, dude,
That's the language you speak, kid. And I've never been impressed by anybody who thinks that speaking correctly, you know, takes away your street cred. Maybe if you're a rapper. Maybe if you make toilet martinis in a maximum security prison, yes, you can just brush off grammar and spelling and the way that English works. But as a writer, no, kids, no. No, sorry. No, you know what? What is it that young people say? They say,
it's not my fault.
No, not that. They say, sorry, not sorry. And I've never been fond of that phrase until right now. Look, if you're self-published, and it was interesting, I went to the writers' conference and they talked about self-publishing, and it has changed so much since the first time I went to that writers' conference as an adult, let alone, you know, going as a kid. They used to be like, well, you know, if you've tried traditional publishing and nobody will take your stuff, go ahead and self-publish it, loser. And now they don't even say that. Now they're just like, you know, there are tons of people that self-publish and they make a fortune. They get their own fan base and those fans are loyal. And yeah, if you self-publish, then go for it. Do it. Jump in with both feet and self-publish your butt off. I love that. But here's the thing. It has to be of a quality. I almost said of a professional quality. But yeah, I'm not even going to go that far. It has to be of a quality. Jason Sanford he's not a real friend of mine, but he's a virtual friend of mine. And he sent me his newest short story collection. And I found two typos in his brilliant first story in that collection. And I sent them to him. And he was grateful to hear it because he's going to make sure that changes immediately. Everybody should have that attitude. I don't know. Anyhow, the guy read from the book. Oh, yeah, that's what I was talking about. He had a ton of influence on his how the audiobook would be done. He had a ton of influence on what the cover art would look like. And I just felt like, well, this doesn't seem typical. But I also feel like it's not typical for a guy to say, you know, this is my first book and it's so great. And the next one is already done and it's almost twice the length of this one. And then, you know, I start on the third one and the British publisher is different than ours. And he was telling me about the differences. They don't just drop the U in color, but there are certain words that they like. He had the word pants in his manuscript and the British publisher changed it to trousers. And that to me is just interesting. Something that I've never had to contemplate because I'm not at that tier in my writing. But I took a lot away from going to this. I guess I'm happy that I went. I think it's neat. He kept saying, you know, one day when I'm a big famous writer, you'll remember coming to this, to my very first book signing, and you'll say, I remember him when, and he had enough time to talk to every single person in the line and personalize each book. And, you know, he won't have that 5 years from now when he's this gargantuan, well-known, Sanderson-like figure. And, oh my goodness, I'd love to have some of that confidence. I'd love to have confidence at all. Although I guess I just said I have confidence in my ability as an editor. I have confidence in my ability as a narrator. So that's two things. And then, you know, of course, fake Sean Connery. I have confidence there. If only that would spill over into something useful. But I just wanted to talk about that. And I've done it for 20 minutes now. And that was a mistake. But hopefully you enjoyed it. And goodbye.